Upfront, inside the entertainment industry, is brought to you by member-supported Jazz 91.9 WCLK.
Coming up on this week's edition of Upfront, hip-hop icons Salt and Pepper are here to chat about their new Lifetime biopic. Vince Velasquez and David Quinn, stars of TV1's true crime series ATL Homicide, are back to chat about their new season and more. I'll also be playing music from Salt and Pepper, as well as Public Enemy and a throwback from Whitney Houston. But first, here's Reva Blue with this week's entertainment buzz.
Jazz and soul music vocalist Ledisi is set to play legendary gospel singer Mahalia Jackson in a new biopic titled Remember Me, The Mahalia Jackson Story. The film will focus on Jackson's friendship and devotion to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and her unsung contribution to the civil rights movement. This is the third film project about the iconic gospel singer. Orange is the New Black actress Danielle Brooks is starring in an upcoming Lifetime movie titled The Mahalia Jackson Story and is produced by GMA's Robin Roberts and directed by Atlanta's own Kenny Leon. Grammy-winning singer Jill Scott is also starring in a big screen version titled Mahalia and is being executive produced by Jamie Foxx and Queen Latifah. That's this week's Entertainment Buzz. I'm Reva Blue.
Support for WCLK programming comes from the High Museum of Art, presenting Dawood Bey, an American project, on view now through March 14th. The exhibition features photographs that trace the 45 years of Bey's career, beginning with street photography in 1970s Harlem to recent portraits and landscapes. Time tickets are required and available for purchase at high.org.
Wake up, wake up, wake up. This is Spike Lee listening to my man, Ray Cornelius, Upfront, 91.9 WCLK.
My first segment features David Quinn and Vince Velasquez, stars of TV1's popular true crime series, ATL Homicide. The dynamic duo are back for a third season of episodes based on their iconic careers as homicide detectives in these mean Atlanta streets. Their real-life interviews are paired with dramatic recreations featuring actors Angelo Diaz and Christopher Diaz. Check out part one of our conversation where we address the controversial debate over defunding the police, the Rayshard Brooks case, and much more.
Vince Velasquez and David Quinn of ATL Homicide, welcome back to Upfront. What's up, guys?
What's up, Ray, old friend? Good to see you again.
So good to see you guys as well. We're back for a brand new season on TV1 beginning Monday, January 25th. And before we even get into all of that stuff, so much has happened since the last time. I think the last time I saw you guys was the 2018 or 2019 Bronze Lens Film Festival? That was the last time?
You know, that was it.
Yeah, it sure was. That's right.
Yeah. Bronze Lens. During that festival, talking about the show, talking about the amazing cases that you guys have helped to crack and all of the work that you guys have done here in the Atlanta area. So much happened in 2020, and I know we're going to talk about the show, but I've got to go back so much in terms of police officers, the Black Lives Matter movement, defunding the police. Let's get into that, because I know my listeners have a lot of questions. I know when all of that stuff was happening, you guys were top of mind. I was like, I need to talk to my guys. I need to know, you know, what are their thoughts? What's going on? So let's go right to it. What are your thoughts? And we'll start with you, David, on defunding the police.
Well, in terms of defunding the police, I think that we have to reimagine the police. What's currently in play is not working. We've got to, you know, if you take the money away, the police are going to leave. That's just how it works. Which what we have to do is hold them accountable in a way before there's a body on the ground, before someone is robbed, raped, or before their rights are taken away constitutionally. We've got to be there early. That means know who your precinct captain is, know who who's running your neighborhood. You know, we can't be reactionary. We got to demand, since we're paying the taxes, to actually get action, because clearly there's two separate law enforcement. one for white people and one for black and brown. It's the way they respond. I mean, that is the reimagining right there. It's got to start right there.
And you, Vince, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, I'll take a little bit of a deeper dive. I've been pretty vocal over the summer on my social media and conversations. And it's not that I'm trying to get my opinion across. It's not that. It's I want to learn. I want to hear what people have to say. And I've very much been interested in hearing all perspectives. And what I've learned is there's the stark difference between generationally when you're talking to someone who's older versus younger, especially people of color. And that's based on experiences, you know, and I get that. So there's a defund the police movement, and then there's a disband police opinion. I am totally against disbanding the police. You know, I mean, I just, in my opinion, it's ludicrous because we have to have someone to call. You know, we're a nation of law, right? Whether it's been dished out unequally, which it has, we still have to operate within those parameters. So as far as defunding, I'm going to piggyback on what David said. I think to use his term, reimagining, is probably in line with my belief system, too. You know, mental illness is top of the list on that. Recently, and I forgive me, I don't remember what city it just recently happened, where an older gentleman was shot and killed by a police officer. I think it was Texas, but don't quote me on that. But what I learned is a few days before that or a week before that, a mental health professional showed up at that person's house and was able to talk him out and deal with that situation safely. And then a week or days later, another call goes out they didn't call the police, mind you. The police were called by someone else. And then the police officer showed up and ends up shooting this man in his front yard and kills him. So when we talk about defunding the police, those are the areas, one of them in particular, that I think we can do a better job. Police shouldn't be out there every day dealing with the everyday mental illness when there's not violence or a law being broken. That's not the police's job, you know, and I think we can reimagine different things with homelessness and mental illness and juveniles. So that is defunding. That's moving funding resources from one area to another in a municipality. Instead of it being a police function, take that out of the budget and make it a community services function, which is a totally different department in the city. So if that's part of defunding, then I agree with that. I don't agree with defunding completely because we got to have law and order. And, you know, if somebody steals your car, you have two choices. The three choices: you either just go buy a new car, go get it back, or call the cops. Those are your choices. And, you know, depends on who you ask. Some may choose one, two, or three.
I want to go back to something, David, that you had mentioned in a previous interview about the relationships between cops and the community. When I think about the Rayshard Brooks incident, you know, I was like, why was an officer not available in that area that could have immediately diffused that situation that is primarily in that area? Someone that is kind of familiar with that area of Atlanta. Can we talk about this lack of, I guess, relationships between police officers and the community?
I worked at Beat University and Pryor, where Rayshard Brooks was killed, the first 10 years of my career in the dark from, you know, on the graveyard shift. And everybody knew me. Everybody knew that they didn't have to dial 911. They knew where I was going to be. I was going to be at the corner store. I was going to be at the convenience store. I was going to be, you know, getting something to eat. Or I used to eat my lunch in the car at the intersection of University and Pryor. So if people would have like issues out there as far as crime, they would come knock on my window 3 o'clock in the morning. Quinn, come on. So we have to get back to that. We have to get less tactical in our law enforcement, these communities, and have more compassion. I mean, I've just seen so much tactical response when it involves black and brown people. It sickens me. It really sickens me. And then to have that parallel of what happened on January 6th, a day that's going to live in infamy, where these people of another race, the white race, they were hugged and encouraged to walk out of that particular historical landmark and not cause any more trouble. That's not how they deal with us. If you have your neighborhood policing and they bring it back, that term community policing has been overused. you need your neighborhood cop. And we talk about defunding too much. The ones that suffer, the people in these marginalized communities, which are Black and brown folk, they've got to have people respond to them. They pay taxes. They live in that community. They do all the living, dying, and prospering in that community, and they got to be served correctly. It's a mindset. They got to change. You know, when you see a person of color and you feel like they're a threat, you got to use your head first before you start using all this equipment.
44th and 3rd Bookseller, a proud supporter of WCLK programming, is a Black-owned family business established in 2017 that offers books celebrating the contributions of writers from the African diaspora. The store currently features a selection of holiday books, calendars, and our flavor of the month. Information and selections are available at 44thandthirdbookseller.com.
Coleman Domingo, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
You just heard classic sounds from hip-hop divas Salt and Peppa performing their iconic hit, Push It. Their legendary career will be on full display tonight in a new Lifetime biopic titled Salt and Peppa and chronicles their rise to superstardom. I caught up with the duo during a recent press conference where Cheryl Salt Denton reveals what she hopes audiences will take away from the film, especially aspiring female rappers.
I think that just telling the story of women in the music industry, the ups and downs, the challenges that we've overcome, the challenges that we face constantly as females in a male-dominated field of music, but mostly a story of success, of pushing through, you know, regardless of the circumstance, and still maintaining the status of the iconic brand. So new artists, I would say longevity takes commitment. It takes originality. Salt and Peppa brought something different to the table. We were unique and had our own sound. So I would definitely say, don't be a cookie cutter copy of anyone else to be original, and you'll be able to last in this business.
The ladies also opened up about the inspiration behind their iconic name and their enduring legacy.
Well, it's so funny you mentioned Salt and Peppa, but because our original name was Supernature. So that was the original name. But when we had our first single, the Showstopper, and we have our, you know, in the verse, we go, you know, we go together like Salt and Pepper. All the fans was like, yo, play that Salt and Pepper song. Them song from them Salt and Pepper girls. They kind of remember that line from that song. And so Herbie was like, you're Salt, you're Pepper. And you know what? It wouldn't have been so big if we kept the name Supernature. Hands down, no. You're right. Salt and Pepper was the way to go.
I agree. I mean, I think symbolically, it represents, you know, two women that are polar opposites, but are best friends. I think there's a salt and a pepper in every friendship. So I think the audience was able to relate to that, you know, in a way that is very personal. And so it represented us and our personalities in an amazing way. So I don't think it would have been anything near what we are if it wasn't for that name.
Come on, let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things that may be. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex. Let's talk about sex.
Salt and Peppa always pushed the envelope when it came to their music and lyrics, and their controversial song Let's Talk About Sex was an example of that. However, the song and the issues surrounding safe sex became an anthem of empowerment when it became a PSA titled Let's Talk About AIDS. Here's what the ladies had to say about the inspiration behind that and becoming the first hip-hop artist to address HIV/AIDS awareness and prevention in the African-American community.
This year marks the 40th anniversary of HIV/AIDS in America, 1981-2021 is 40 years. And your stance, your song about HIV/AIDS and Let's Talk talk about sex was very, very important at that time. What was the deciding factor for you ladies to say, hey, let's do this song? Because very few African-American artists were doing songs about HIV advocacy at that time. You really put your careers on the line. Can you talk about what was the definitive moment that said, yes, we got to do this song. We got to do this for our community.
Well, I feel like the song alone, Let's Talk About Sex, it, you know, we challenged radio. We knew that, you know, what we were saying was really important, the do's and the don'ts. And then at that moment, with the platform we had, we always thought it was important to use our voice. So with Let's Talk About AIDS, Peter Jennings, it's funny because with Peter Jennings, you know, he's a TV personality. His daughter was listening to Let's Talk About Sex. And he was like, oh, like what you're listening to? When he realized, you know, what the content of the song, he's like, oh, this is awesome. Let's keep pushing it out there. And he came up, you know, with Let's Talk About AIDS. And we did a PSA and, you know, and we thought it was so important, like I said, to raise awareness, because it was, we didn't have the answer of it and how to get it and how you did. And we seen that our athletes around, it was close to home. And we were like, this is important to understand this. So shout out to Peter Dennis, you know, coming up with that PSA.
And Salt, you were shaking your head too. Did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
Pep definitely said it. I just feel like it became something we felt was a responsibility, not only to our fans, but to, you know, the entertainment community. It happening to Magic was very shocking to us all. It was a subject no one wanted to really touch. It was very taboo. And we felt like it was just something that we really cared about and wanted to spread awareness and be the first, you know, like Salt and Pepper, we do a lot of firsts to really speak out and inform people.
Salt and Pepper premieres tonight at 8 p.m. on Lifetime.
The Clark Atlanta University School of Business Administration provides a quality program of business management education for young men and women throughout the world. Enrollment is comprised of one of the largest pools of African American business students in the nation, representing over 40 states and 30 countries. Clark Atlanta University School of Business Administration is committed to developing future leaders who will provide innovative solutions to global business challenges. For more information, the website is cau.edu.
This is Omar Dorsey, a.k.a. Hollywood of Queen Sugar, and you're listening to Upfront with Ray Cornelius.
My last segment is part two of my conversation with the stars of ATL Homicide, where they discuss the new season and their own experience of racial profiling while filming the show.
Vince, I want to come back to you and talk about this new season of ATL Homicide. You guys shot this during the pandemic. So many productions were shut down in March of 2020. And then, of course, Georgia started opening back up over the summertime. And a lot of productions, a lot of folks went straight into production. And you guys were part of that. Can you talk about some of the changes that you guys had to go through in order to bring us this new season?
Yeah, so we were in the middle of production when we got shut down, as everybody did, all industries did, and they should have. You know, it was something that the world had never seen, at least in my lifetime. So we all just hunkered down at home, everybody sheltering in place, and we're trying to figure out what's going on. We see people dying, and then we start to see some type of, maybe a light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak. That's arguable. Some may argue that we're not quite there yet, but nevertheless, Georgia started to open back up, and we got a call. And what we did was we would film our show here in Atlanta, David and I. Actors, they recreate in Knoxville. That's what the headquarters of the production company. So to be safe, the network and the production company agreed that we would create kind of a mini bubble with COVID tests, with temperature checks, safety measures, masks, gloves, you know, sanitation. It was a sterile set and we were fine. Now, David and I sit next to each other, as you see in the episodes. You know, you'll see a shot of me and him together and me by myself, but we're sitting next to each other. And I sat next to this guy for 19 years. So I wouldn't let no pandemic change that. You know, we felt safe. He felt safe. And the question was, do you guys, you know, they kind of tiptoed around it. What do you guys think about, you know, filming? We'll start back up. These are the safety measures. you guys okay with sitting next to each other? We were like, yeah, no question. Because the alternative was, you know, kind of remote in and out. Like, nah, man, I'm going to sit next to my partner. This is what we're going to do. We did this for 19 years. I feel safe. And we knocked it out. We knocked out 15 episodes. We finished it. We did the voiceovers, the driving scenes, you know, and during, you know, some of these driving scenes, you know, we even had an incident of racial profiling while filming our show, you know, so we were dealing with a lot. I mean, we're dealing with a pandemic. We're dealing with, you know, trying to get back to work, trying to stay safe. And then, you know, the most obvious thing that we've been dealing with all summer creeps into our world while we're filming this show, you know, where we're filming in a neighborhood. And I know I'm going way off, but it just reminded me of this, that we're filming the show in a neighborhood that's gentrified. Someone doesn't believe who we are and we're suspicious all of a sudden. And we now have to prove ourselves of who we are. Me, David Quinn, in suits driving a Crown Vic with cameras mounted on the windshields, and a neighborhood guy that's a part of the neighborhood patrol is filming us as he walks by. So we stop him to ask him if he's okay. And then he posts something on the group, the neighborhood group, saying that we're suspicious. And they claim they're filming ATL homicide, but I checked with the union and they don't have any information about anybody shooting a series called ATL homicide. Had it not been for two women in that neighborhood group who happened to be friends of ours, who were black female attorneys, that had to vouch for us on that neighborhood group to say those guys indeed are who they say they are. And they're filming a show that's in its third season during a pandemic. So all of that, Ray, we had to deal with.
That's, and you know, as you're saying that, it's number one, that's crazy. And then number two, it proves why, you know, Black Lives Matter, why we keep having these conversations about the injustice and the unfairness towards black and brown people. You can't film in a neighborhood? Are you serious? Yeah. You mean to tell me that you can't film safely in a neighborhood, a legitimate production that is being shot, that has been on the air for a number of years now? And I think most of Atlanta, if not all of Atlanta, know who you guys are. This must be a transplant that didn't know who you guys are. Right. That is now saying you guys are suspicious. I mean, that's the irony of that.
The irony is incredible. And this is after we showed him our cards that has the show logo of me and Quinn together. We had our producer in the car identified. She's on the speaker. We're doing, remember, we're being safe. So our producer's talking to us through a Bluetooth speaker, right? Setting up the scenes as we're filming. So it's just two cameras mounted on a windshield, a Crown Victoria that looks like a police car. We're in suits and ties. And even after all of that, he takes a picture of our car with the tag and posts it on a neighborhood watch patrol saying we're still suspicious. Incredible.
Wow.
Incredible.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah. So you're listening to the voices of David Quinn and Vince Velasquez of ATL Homicide, new season airing on TV One beginning January 25th. Let's get into this new season. I got a chance to see the first episode, and amazing, amazing, amazing show as always. What were you guys, I guess, coming back? What were you guys looking forward to for this new season? And David, you can jump in on that one as well.
We just wanted to keep pushing our narrative of community service first, service to the family and the community where the homicide occurred. And in being inclusive, we keep trying to make the point that the homicide does not belong to the Atlanta Police Department or the City of Atlanta government. It belongs to that community. And so we, and you'll see in all 15 episodes, we'll incorporate the use of anybody to bring a case to closure. You know, all these secrets that cops hold and, you know, this blue line BS about, well, this is an active investigation, I can't tell you about it. Me and Vin have always just said, here's what happened in your community. You know, how can you help us? And that brought on all the success in closing these homicides that were difficult and intricate in nature.
Yeah, and Ray, listen, if we knew everything, we wouldn't need anybody's help. That's the you know, we're not geniuses, you know. The reason we were good homicide detectives is because we know how to talk to people, but we don't have all the information. We have to rely on the community. We have to rely on the people. And that's what resonates when you watch each episode. You're going to see how Quinn, you know, reaches way back from when he was a patrolman in those neighborhoods. Before I was even a cop, I'm in the military and Dave is patrolling the streets of Atlanta. You know, so we relied on all of our resources, our life experiences, you know, so, and that's what resonates when you watch these episodes, you know, and it's real. Like anybody that knows this knows, this is how we talk to people. What you see on the show is what you get. And let me give a shout out to the actors. They did a great job in season one. They did a phenomenal job in season two. They did a fantastic job in season three. Like they, like people at first were like, I don't know, man, those guys don't really look like you. They don't act like you. Now they're like, damn, they did TV One got down with these actors because they have really got the essence of who Dave is and the essence of who I am and the chemistry that we have in real life. And you see that on the screen.
Embodied it.
Absolutely. And I felt that when I interviewed you guys for Bronze Lens, I felt that the brotherhood that was formed for the show. Guys, thank you so much for being a part of this week's show and much success to this brand new season. We're talking to the stars of ATL Homicide, airing on new season on Monday, January 25th. And give us that time that it's airing on Monday.
9/8 Central.
All right.
Only on TV One.
Absolutely. Guys, have a great rest of the year. We'll be talking to you soon.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Ray. Thank you. Appreciate it, buddy.
Well, that'll do it for this week's show. I'd like to thank all of my special guests, hip-hop icons Salt-N-Pepa and David Quinn and Vince Velasquez of ATL Homicide. I'd also like to thank our engineer, Jami Wellman, and the voice of entertainment buzz, Ms. Reva Blue. Please join us next week for an in-depth conversation with Jamal Ahmed about this new renaissance of jazz in film.
I can't say the return because jazz has always been synonymous in cinema, but you saw in films like 50 Shades of Grey or even like La La Land where jazz was very kind of, it was almost like jazz was a character.
In parting, I'd like to recognize this week's inauguration of our 46th President of the United States, Joe Biden, and our Madam Vice President, Kamala Harris, by playing Whitney Houston's version of the Star Spangled Banner. That iconic performance turns 30 years old on January 27th. Enjoy.
Upfront, Inside the Entertainment Industry, has been brought to you by Jazz 91.9 WCLK, Atlanta's jazz station, and is recorded from the campus of Clark Atlanta University.